You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome to a jam-packed edition of Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. And even though the season is over, we're not going to cut the music because it's an exciting day to be a Bison. Coach Polisek's opening press conference was today, and as someone who was there, for whatever value a press conference in December can have, I think he knocked it out of the park, and we'll kind of get into some of the things that he said and kind of the vibe of that whole thing. But, I think as it became clear, the more recent former players, you know, were kind of leaning in a certain direction, and the, current players were leaning in a certain direction. When that didn't go the way they wanted, we were kind of in search of a vibe check just to see kind of how things were going. And, I think that some of that, not all of it, but some of that was stemmed a little bit today. Diving real briefly into the news, North Dakota State men's basketball blows a big late lead and loses to Illinois State. I haven't even had a chance to rewatch that yet. Seems like it'd be extremely frustrating to watch. The most obvious news, of course, is Tim Polisek is the new coach of the North Dakota State football team. If you've been, again, living under the rock and this podcast downloading to your phone or device is the first that you're getting this news, surprise. Meaning, of course, that Tyler Roll is not the head coach. North Dakota State didn't win. And then in recruiting news, Maxwell Woods, the Minnesota Mr. Football, who deleted his NDSU commitment tweet, has now committed to South Dakota State University. So that, at least for right now, seems like a pretty big win for SDSU in the recruiting space, where, you know, North Dakota State, during the time where Max Woods announced or didn't announce, but during the time that Max Woods removed his commitment tweet and tweeted his commitment to South Dakota State University, that entire time frame, NDSU did not have a head coach. So that, you know, is not that difficult, I guess, to read into. Okay, bringing on at this time, number three in your program, number one in your hearts, and somebody who played football for Coach Polisek, Mr. Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, buddy, how are you?
I'm good. It's definitely a mixed emotions Monday as we record this.
Yeah.
Obviously, Saturday did not go the way we wanted it to, and then that bled into Sunday with us being Packer fans. So,
yeah.
Also,
Packer fan wanted to talk to me after the press conference about
of course,
what went wrong. I was like, I don't know. Wasn't great.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield having a perfect passer rating. That's neither here nor there. It was a tough weekend, no doubt. And then the news yesterday with Coach Polisek being announced, you're thrilled for the man. I obviously have a relationship with him, having played for him, and obviously a huge fan of him. I've been very vocal about that, especially on social media, as have a lot of guys. And then at the simultaneously, your heart just hurts for Tyler, because it's another man that deserves an opportunity to be a head ball coach. And I know he's put a lot into this program. And, I think today put to bed quite a few questions. So it's exciting to see such a phenomenal presser by Coach P. I tell you, I almost showed up to this pod with my helmet on. Truly, I still have my helmet. So, a lot of emotions, but certainly excited about the future of the program, no doubt.
Yeah. We'll get into some of that. We'll get into a lot of that. This will not be the world's longest game recap. It's just because I don't know, that's not the thing to talk about at this time, right? Like people have kind of already emotionally dealt with the end of the season, even if folks are getting this on a Monday afternoon or Monday, Monday evening, if you will. I think the big news right now is Coach P. That's the big news. And so that's what we'll get into. Offensive struggles, really, anytime, the game ends 16-16, you're not probably thrilled with the offensive output. You're hoping to obviously produce more than 16 points. I think we talked about NDSU averaging, somewhere around 38 points a game, talked about NDSU being the number one offense in the Valley, the number two offense in the country. For scholarship teams, like that's sort of the offensive standard, if you will. I think part of that, you saw some big misses from Cam. I didn't think Cam played a terrible game, but at the same time, there were some big shots downfield where it was just, barely missed, or, just a tick off here, a tick off there, or they missed the protection. So he had to get off his base and try and deliver a long one downfield and kind of miss. But Trev, and just in case you're wondering, Trevor, yes, I was able to mute your mic. So whatever.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Jet. He's
excited.
He's excited. He's upset. I don't know what he's doing. My dad's supposed to be watching him right now, so I'm going to have that conversation.
It's all right. Shout out to Everett.
So pick it up where are you at on the script here?
Just the offensive struggles, a game that ended, the game ends 16-16. You're certainly trying to do more than that on offense. Cam missing a couple throws, hitting some huge throws. Yeah. But just a couple misses downfield where it looks like, one time I remember it looked like Raja and he just weren't on the same page. And another time where he had Eli, but the protection broke down and he had to move off his base and then miss the throw. And I'm not saying he can't make that throw, but it's like, man, if the protection just holds, I know Cam hits that throw. And, just little things here and there that lead to a 16-point offensive output during regulation that is probably not, what you were looking for.
Well, I think it's twofold. One, you have to give credit to Montana's defense for
– yes. They were better
for preparing. They got them all scheduled. They did a phenomenal job, and, it'll certainly be interesting to see what they do in Frisco with the vaunted offense that South Dakota State has. But I think it was a little bit of an adrenaline flow. I mean, the offensive production that has been happening for about, five, six games in a row that NDSU had won since the South Dakota State loss was trending in a very fast upward slope exponentially. And you're going to have a day eventually at some point. Obviously, we didn't want to see it within the season where you're not as productive. And that was this Saturday. Cam had a couple of misses that certainly would have probably changed the outcome of the game. And it is what it is. He certainly didn't play awful, awful. But you connect on a couple of those home run balls, you certainly change the trajectory of the game. So I think I chalked that up to, one, Montana game planning very effectively and being able to get them off schedule. The crowd at Montana, getting them in third and long situations, that's just very difficult. And then, a little bit of an adrenaline flow, just trying to – I don't necessarily think Cam or anyone on the offensive line was pressing. But sometimes when that adrenaline flow is going so high, you're more apt to kind of make the throws a little bit long like you did.
Yeah, yep. And you mentioned penalties and let's just have the discussion. It's not in the script, but let's just have the discussion because I didn't get a chance to ask. I didn't really understand when was the appropriate time to ask. Everybody's questions were directed at Coach Polasek, which is fine. It's his moment. But I wanted to ask Matt Larson, about the timing of the announcement. Both Coach Kleiman and Coach Bowl left at similar times. Their replacements were announced prior to the national semifinals. I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but both of those games were then won by NDSU. This time you wait till after the game, NDSU loses the game. Again, I'm not blaming it on that necessarily, but there were some losses in recruiting. There was a loss on the field. There was some nasty stuff that happened, you know, from Ants leaving and then the announcement of a new head coach. And again, I don't very well could have lost Maxwell Woods to South Dakota State without this happening. Very well could have lost to Montana, regardless of who you name. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what's your thoughts on the difference? Did they wait until after the season because it was an external? And it is strange even to – and you know what? Now I'm going to go even further off topic and just remind people, yes, we advocated for Coach Roll. With that said, both of us agreed that Polasek would be a good hire. We can share the opinion that they should have hired Coach Roll and understand that Coach Polasek is also a good option and mm-hmm. can now be happy with that moving forward or supportive of that moving forward. Or, you know, we can have an opinion and think that there is more than one good option. Those things don't have to be in a vacuum. Like they hire, you know, someone from complete left, they hired Jason Eck or Tim Brewster, there's a different conversation happening now.
And I'm that's okay, not the conversation. You know, as a former player, I'm good with it because Coach P's advisor.
Yeah, he's not external.
And you saw that in the presser if someone was able to watch that and we've got
stuff coming up. Don't you worry.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, he's a Bison through and through. I know the current players don't necessarily know that through and through. I think they feel that probably after talking with him and seeing him. So that certainly is a positive in this short term since he's been announced. But I think the announcement came after the semifinal game solely because Tim was probably the favorite, I'm sure, in the administration's eyes. And they thought, okay, we need to make sure that we can focus on this, or the team and the staff can focus on this game as much as humanly possible, given the circumstances. And then after the game, win or lose, we're going to announce the header because we have to for signing day. There's got to be a man in that seat. And then the 2023 version of the Bison is going to continue on if they were to win this game and then, you know, prepare for Frisco. So that I think that was probably choreographed. That's speculation. I don't know if that's true or not, but that definitely seems to be the case. And if Tyler was going to be the guy, I would like to think that would have been announced prior to the semis. So really neither here nor there. It's just obviously the kind of the elephant in the room, given the timing, but I do think it was more indicative of just, hey, let's just get through this semifinal game. Win or lose, we'll announce Tim as the head coach on Sunday.
And I did a couple of radio appearances and, you know, things of that nature and had some, you know, off discussions. And that was sort of my thing. Like, if it wasn't Tyler by Thursday at like 5, then it wasn't Tyler. And I sort of agreed with that sentiment that would
on the same token, which, you know, yeah. I agree with that. I think that it gives you that vibe. On the same token, like, this just kind of gives insight into the type of man that Tyler is. And I said this in the group chat. I know when we were kind of like, do we know anything? Because we didn't.
Right.
Tyler's the type of guy that would say, hey, you know, I appreciate it. Let's do it. Let's focus on Montana. Let's tell the team prior to the game so they know. And then we'll announce it publicly, you know, after the game. I could have seen that scenario too.
All right. Back to the recap, or we're never going to get into it. Defensively, I thought this was a really good game plan and a really good performance. I thought this was probably – whether it's Matt Entz and Jason Petrino or just Jason Petrino, it doesn't really matter. I thought this was their best plan defensively of the year. That Montana offense is no joke. And like I said, I thought this was their best plan on defense for the year. To hold that group to 16 points in regulation was really impressive. Of course, overtime didn't go the way you wanted defensively, you know, to give up touchdown on both possessions and give up the 2-point, although giving up the 2-point was hilarity, even though there's a face mask and they would have gotten another shot at it. So you never know what's going to happen there. But I thought defensively they were pretty good. And then I thought the late drive was big time. It was pretty clear. I would guess there's been some time in the ice bath for young Mr. Cam Miller. He took some shots And it was pretty clear. Even I it looked like they were protecting him during overtime as well. I mean, that overtime stuff was pretty coal heavy.
Well, if you watch there's a clip after the touchdown pass to Eli, with just under a minute to go. He's like almost getting halfway helped off the field, and I don't know if he's holding like an elbow or. I didn't see a shot. I still haven't seen it like a hit that he took. I'm sure he did, given the flow of that play. My guess is he probably took something pretty heavy in that play specifically.
Speaking of protect Eli Green at all costs. I tell you what, man, I don't
know. He'd be a great Green Bay Packer.
I don't know. Like, speaking of the Green Bay Packers, and this is going to sound blasphemous, I don't know if I've seen a better wide receiver at NDSU than Eli Green. I don't know. and not as a pro prospect. Like, I don't think Eli Green will go in the top 35 like Christian did.
Well, Christian's an alien athlete. So, but like,
Christian's college production was very good, as was Shep's, as was Warren G, our guy. Vra, you know, like Ryan Smith, yourself. I don't know if I've seen anybody quite like 13.
I know what you're saying, because this was your word, so I'm going to steal your verbiage. He's snappy.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
He's got the twitch that Four had, which is, of course, Ryan Smith. For the people who are not, you know, Bison Nation buffs. 4 inches
taller than Ryan Smith.
What's that?
He's 4 inches taller than Ryan Smith.
Yes, I know. But that makes it even more impressive. Because Ryan's got lower hips to the ground, so it's, you know.
Right.
You know, it's easier to be snappy when you got that lower center of gravity. And he is elusive. Like, the way he can get in and out of cuts so fast, and his decision-making ability to find the open spot is uncanny. And then
the way he tracks it, dude, and the way he actually catches it.
Yeah, and the way he can go up and get the ball. He is a special talent. Yeah. And the way he produced in the back half of this season, I don't know what happened. I don't know if he saw the voodoo doctor that Aaron Rodgers is seeing. I don't know. Like, he was a good player before that, but it was like
Clay.
Dude, he just
I mean, his last seven games are first team All America, flat out. And I know that the totality of the season isn't even probably first team All League. In fact, I did not pick Eli first team All League. But his last, so the four playoff games and the last three games of the regular season is straight up just first team All America.
Yeah.
Period. Done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. 2-point play. Got to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So I get what it was, right? It's swinging gate. Rajah's a high school QB. The point of the play is for Stuffle to bluff like he's blocking, release to the back of the end zone, and Rajah hits him in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
That's the point of the play. I don't like it. I don't think it's a very popular play, and I get you can – like, that's a play calling guy ever always says, right? The guy that hates Coach Roll, the guy that used to yell at Coach Polisek, the guy that used to yell at Coach Vegan, he always has an imaginary book of plays that work better. With that said, I don't love sprint outs on 2-point conversions. I think they cut the field in half. And when you have a sprint out of swinging gate and you have one option and that one option falls down, it is all bad. I mean, there is no plan B. That's what I struggle with that, because there's nowhere for him to run and score.
Especially the way the formation was lined up. I mean, they had everyone spread out on the right-hand side for protection, and I get it. And it was almost like it was a copy of what Montana got away with. And Junior Bergen threw that ball from the 20-yard line.
I know.
Bad decision-making. It worked. So
yeah.
So it's like, what do you do?
Right.
And I hadn't really thought about it until you said it, you know, a few minutes ago here as we're chatting, that it could have been to protect Cam. Maybe Cam was like in a lot of pain still. I don't know. That's, you know, maybe we'll find that out eventually. Hindsight's 2020, obviously, but the part where they were in that formation, in my head, I'm thinking certainly they're going to, you know, check down to like a base set and not be so spread out. like a swinging gate. And when the motion came from Raja, in my head, I'm thinking they're certainly not doing this. And so that was kind of tough to watch, especially knowing the type of push that was happening up front, even more so on the play before.
Yeah.
So obviously the call, just hindsight,
Yeah. Then if they go plus one QB run game and it gets stopped, it's like, goddamn roll. All he ever does is run call.
Yeah. So predictable. Everyone knew nine was going to run.
Yeah. That wasn't predictable.
Well, it was so predictable in the first play of overtime when he, you know, busted it for 25 yards and wasn't even touched.
Yeah.
So hindsight's always going to be 20/20. I do wish they would have probably ran something up the middle and lose on your bread and butter, especially the way it was working late in the game. You know, NDSU's offensive line was not gassed to any stretch of the imagination. You know, I feel like that's a play you call in the fifth overtime when you're everything's out of the bag, like, and you don't have anything left.
Sure.
So, and it's neither here nor there. And then obviously the missed call again, it doesn't change the outcome of the game. It would have certainly given North Dakota State another chance at a 2-point play, but I just think whoever with that side judge, I think he just missed it. Holding, defense, pass interference, whatever you want to call it, it really just is happened here or there.
To the goal. That's it. Yeah. What you call doesn't matter.
Yeah. So
but we're not going to sit here and blame this game on the refs either.
I mean, that's not the reason they lost this game. I mean, NDSU certainly had their chances. I mean, kicking it to Junior Bergen in the fourth quarter. It's not gonna.
God, I didn't even think about that with 16 points allowed, and seven of them are that.
Seven of them was a punt return.
Credit.
And he was a difference maker. I mean, he really was, and he's the type of guy that you expect in a game like this to be the difference maker. And credit to Montana, man. I mean, that Junior Bergen's a stud. Five is incredible player to watch, and obviously he scored the touchdown in overtime as well. But you know, so yeah, the two point play and the call, their missed call by the official, that's not the reason NDSU lost. We're not going to sit here and pound the table on that. North Dakota State had their chances. It's just an unfortunate result that came about, and really nothing you can do about it at this point.
All right, brief reflection on the season. I mean, this team is kind of who I thought they were. I spent most of the season, most of the preseason, believing that this was the second best team in the country. I don't really have a different feeling after that. I don't know that necessarily the best team won on Saturday. But what I will say is that this was a failure, in my opinion, by the playoff committee. I am firm belief that the number 2 through 5 best teams in the country were on one side of the bracket.
Yeah.
If not 2 through 6. You know, I think what the committee laid out, And South Dakota State's the best team in the country. Don't get me wrong.
It's theirs to lose. From the get-go.
Right. Mm-hmm. I just think that they could have done a better job. I think if NDSU was seated, unless, of course, they were seated on South Dakota State's side of the bracket, which brings a whole other, you know, issue is, but that they're probably in Frisco. The ask to win 4 consecutive, you know, playoff games like that, is tough, especially when 2 of them go to overtime and 3 of the 4 are on the road. That's tough. It's very difficult. And this team almost did it. This team was, you know, a down away from doing it. A bounce of the ball here or there away from doing it. And I think you got to be proud as a Bison fan, especially when, you know, this team was kind of left for dead. And it's an old Aaron Rodgers quote, down years for me are like career years for everybody else. And it was kind of a cocky thing for him to say.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's North Dakota State football. Their worst fire everybody season is tied for the third best season in the country for the 137 teams that play this game.
Pretty wild perspective.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it from that lens. But still, you know, the standard is the standard. And, you know, and this group – putting a bow on this type of season that they've had. In my time of being associated with North Dakota State and having played and everything, and, you know, doing the podcast with yourself, this group grew on me faster than anybody has, or any team has, or any version of the Bison has since that association started for myself personally. Because when you exited that game in Grand Forks, you wondered and questioned, truthfully, the type of resolve and grit that this group had. You didn't really know. And that was their stub-the-toe game. It was a really weird stub-the-toe game. It's not to discredit UND to any stretch of the imagination. They threw everything they had and then some to go beat NDSU, and they certainly deserve the credit in that regard. But from that moment forward, it was like these guys said, what do we want to make of this? And they made everything that they possibly could have out of the rest of the season. And I just give the tip of the cap to them for having that type of fight and resolve, because they could have bagged it in a lot of different ways. And
yeah, lost five or six games, missed the playoffs. Absolutely.
Yeah. And they chose not to do that. They chose to fight. They chose to show up with grit. And as a guy, having been in those shoes like they have, that's all I can do is appreciate that.
Yep. All right, let's get to it. This episode of Bison Report Radio is brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. Four-wheel drive season is a-coming, folks, and they have an unbelievable inventory of both new and pre-owned vehicles in four-wheel drive and all-wheel drive. Go check out the Chevy Equinox. Go check out the Chevy Silverado. Go check out the big old SUVs with the Chevy Tahoe and Chevy Suburban. And like I said, you're going to find both beautiful brand-new option as well as quality used or pre-owned vehicles right there on the I-29 frontage road in Fargo, or if you just want to peruse, gatewayfargo.com. Okay. I'm going to use the magic of StreamYard here to pull up a couple of videos and kind of get our takes on a couple of things that were said by Coach P during his time here.
2018, when Coach Entz got hired, it was heartbreaking. When I didn't get the job, but I think it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It allowed me to move forward and learn and grow and experience things that I didn't know even existed in college football or in college athletics. And I'm so much more confident sitting here today getting this opportunity than I would have been back in 2018.
All right, Trev, I think that is important messaging. I think, I pulled a specific quote too from the press release where they talked about the diversity of experience that we need to move us forward. And I think that right there, right or wrong, you and I both put our opinions forward. That's it. We're not going to talk about that aspect of it probably anymore. But this is, I think, what got Tim Polasek the job over Tyler Roll right there is going out to Iowa and going out to Wyoming, getting, you know, top 25. I don't know if they finished in the top 25 this year or not. It doesn't matter. But top 25, Power Four, like recent, you know, Big Ten West champion level experience as an assistant, and then coordinator experience in the next level, which at the time was the G5, but like in the Mountain West, kind of in NDSU's dream conference for their next step. Where Coach Roll has been at Concordia Moorhead, Moorhead High School, and North Dakota State, which, again, you and I did not care enough about to not have him as our choice. Mm-hmm. But the simple reality is he does not have that experience that Tim got from not getting the job when they hired Coach Entz in 2018.
Oh, for sure. I mean, my first thoughts with him saying that, there's a level of humility there that I can respect and appreciate that he showed from a genuine lens. Like him being able to go through that previous experience interviewing for the job and being able to take that and go, okay, what do I learn from this to get better? He certainly applied it. And that's probably what set him apart, is he's now able to showcase that type of experience that he's had, especially with knowledge changing landscape and NIL becoming a part of this deal since he last interviewed for the job. And North Dakota State obviously just started that journey. And Coach Polisek has seen that in a whole different light and realm. That it again, it's all speculation, but it indicates that North Dakota State is priming themselves for a jump or a change or whatever the changing landscape looks like to continue to stay in that second tier of Division I football. And Coach Polisek having that type of experience, like you said, in the Big Ten, in the Mountain West, in the MACtion, theoretically is going to play out much, much better versus, you know, someone that hasn't quite seen it to that level.
Okay. So that's going to bring me to actually switch up the script just by one here, because I want one more quote that's a little bit different order than what we talked about, but I think really plays in what you just said.
Okay.
I think continuity is one thing, but I also talked to President Cook and Matt Larson about, you know, if it's about continuity, what are you guys doing here? You know, let's move this thing forward. And with that, I think there's going to be a couple, there's going to be some things that potentially get adjusted. The timeline isn't very specific right now because the target is signing day. Okay, so I'm gathering information, and I would hope to be able to move forward into the new year with things pretty settled.
Okay, so that question was about coaching staff, but yeah. I think it applies to the big picture yet again. You know, I think there's going to be some shift, and it's a unique spot, right? Because with maybe a couple exceptions, and I'm not 100% sure, you know, by and large, both Coach Kleiman and Coach Entz kept everyone that agreed to stick around because there were so many guys that went with to the new place. So the people that like Entz brought in were the people that didn't go to K-State. The people that Kleiman brought in were the people that didn't go to Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And they already had enough open positions on their staff to kind of put their stamp on the staff, put their stamp on the direction. Tim has no open positions. If Tim wants new coaches in here, people are going to have to not come back. And so that answer of continuity is not really going to do it for me, I think is telling both from a what are our expectations of what we can do with this program and my staff is going to be my staff. That's what I got from it.
Yeah. Well, so I'll go a step further within it. And because I think you're exactly right. Is that type of experience that Polisek has in his experience at North Dakota State, he understands the brand that North Dakota State is and the brand that it could become. And being able to understand that bridge and what is going to be able to bring NDSU to that level, his experience is going to bode well for that process to be hopefully shorter in the theoretical picture of a jump and being able to get to that national winning prominence that North Dakota State has become known for in FCS football. Because when that jump from Division II to Division I FCS was made, nobody really knew how well it would go, how fast NDSU could get back to like national championship relevance. It happened very quickly.
Yep.
Coach Polisek can see where this brand could go, which also means he understands the type of personnel that is required in the building and in the offices and in the coaching staff to make that happen. So I think you're exactly right. I'm excited to see what that looks like and how that plays out. But it is very telling that he's got that vision, you know, in a very subtle way that he can, you know, openly communicate in an opening presser. So, I'm assuming we're going to find out probably fairly soon. I don't know if we're going to find out before signing day.
Yeah, he mentioned a couple of different ones. Okay. A week is one that he mentioned, which would be Christmas, literally Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And then he also mentioned the first of the year. So I don't know that we're going to really probably have to wait too long to find some of this stuff out. You mentioned that you almost showed up to the pod with your helmet on. There are a couple different, you know, we have the Bison Report football staff group chat, and that thing goes basically every day, especially, you know, after the summer wraps, that thing goes basically you know, anywhere between 5 and 80 times in a day. And the boys were ready. I don't think you were the only one ready to run through a wall. And I got to play this for you and ask you if this is one of the ones that got
you. The promise I made the players yesterday was that this staff, you know, will make every decision for them, what positions them best for success, for the opportunity for them to reach their full potential, and for them to have as much as possible, okay, without ever damaging the locker room or the best college football culture there is. I told them that we'll wake up every day fully dedicated to each person that sits in those seats to maximizing their opportunity and for them to reach their full potential. I think if we can get that done, I know we'll have an opportunity to beat Colorado next year.
How'd that make you feel?
Like speechless. The phrase of the best culture in college football, it couldn't be summed up better. And I say this to a lot of folks when they ask about North Dakota State and the brand and what it is, especially around the parts that I live in now in the Southeast, because I do get questions about it a lot. North Dakota State is a national brand. No, it's not like an Ohio State or an Alabama or Georgia, Clemson, any stretch of that imagination. But people know what North Dakota State and North Dakota State football is and means. When he says that, with the places that he's been, and you can tell it's genuine, and having talking to folks that have other experiences at other colleges and universities, you never really truly know and appreciate it until you're away from it.
Right.
And that it rains true through and through. And that's something that I would advocate to current players or guys that are, you know, maybe getting recruited and looking for a home. If you fit the culture at North Dakota State, run towards it and never look back. Because your experience, no matter you're a starter, a guy that, you know, doesn't get as many snaps as you'd have hoped coming in, if you're a part of that and you are a fit for the culture in Fargo, that experience is going to be so much different and better than a lot of places.
Yeah.
And I don't know sometimes you wonder if kids know that, and you can't expect the kids to know that. You know, kids have to make the decisions that are best for them, but it that rains true through and through, and him just advocating that in the presser got my juices flowing. And then the fact he caps that with saying we're going to have a chance to win in Colorado, I don't have any eligibility left. Maybe I can use a COVID year. I don't know.
He's a ball coach. I mean, there's no question about that. He speaks to football people, and that's why, you know, I think we got as jazzed up as we did. Not that I was a player, but I mean, you know, he called himself a football junkie. I would say that's pretty accurate for both you and myself, and all the guys in the chat.
About Jill asking about not recruiting as much because he's a coordinator, and he said, I didn't listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Last one. And this was, I think, potentially a sign of a different approach as it refers to the transfer portal and probably something that a lot of folks wanted to hear.
But having to kind of revamp your approach to the transfer portal process, is that more maybe a change in the way that you are retaining the current roster? Is it more maybe being aggressive in the portal itself with potential additions?
That's a heck of a question. I wish I could use it as the answer. It is the answer. Okay, so I think it comes down to people, you know, finding some young people that can evaluate some tape, finding some young people that can reach out, you know, within the rules to say, hey, are you interested? You know, so getting coaches, you know, on text messages and Twitter once kids are in the portal to find out their interest level and then starting the evaluation process. I want to be aggressive. I think from a social media standpoint and from a media standpoint, it might look like, okay, this guy's over the top aggressive. But the bottom line is you can't even get these portal kids' ear without potentially offering them to get them engaged in the conversation. Then I think it's really important to be super aware of, you know, the kids in each unit. You know, how do they feel about their experience so far? How do they feel about their future opportunity? And try to head some of those things off with more individual meetings and those kind of things just to get a pulse on, okay, what kids could leave and what kids are planning on staying. And then it's just a matter of looking at the playmaking on the team. It's a matter of looking at the depth in each position and saying, okay, we need to attack these two areas and then try to get a little bit of an older guy out of the transfer portal. That fits our DNA. That fits our culture. And the other thing I will mention is I would love for every kid that we potentially do bring in that we had a past knowledge on them. Maybe there's a past relationship or there's a connection.
All right. And one thing I will say, where I sort of had a disagreement with Coach Ants, and he never, I don't even think really said this publicly, but I just think it was clear to everyone that Coach Ants's approach was, once you hit that portal, see you later. You know, that door was not a two-way door for Coach. And I don't know that Tim really even necessarily answered that aspect, but I wonder if that isn't something where Polisek is just a little bit more aware of kind of the state of college football that we're in and just understands, like, yeah, you know, maybe a third-year running back goes into the portal, doesn't like what he sees and wants to come back. We need to be able to have a conversation with that kid about coming back and not just the second he tweets that he's in the portal, his career's over at North Dakota State. The other thing about it is it's clear that, you know, the portal is going to be something that they look into. I certainly don't get the vibe that, you know, they're no longer interested in high school seniors. I don't. But at the same time, I think they probably – it does seem like this is going to be a group that's a little bit more aggressive in adding 21, 22, 23-year-olds to the roster. Especially, I think, where the biggest thing that I think – and, of course, COVID robbed us of the 2020 national champion NDSU Bison in a walk. I mean, that team would have been
– Yeah, people can debate us all they want on that. They'll lose.
But the – preceding years where you don't win the title in 22, you don't make the title game in 23. I think one of the bigger mistakes that were made, or one of the bigger issues that they had, was trying to replace portal departures with just more high school seniors. And it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. You need to replace age with age to sort of stay in the same competitive cycle. And it didn't work out. And I think that's an approach that it just doesn't seem to me like the Polisek era will take.
Yeah. And I know you and Zach, kind of talked about that. I can't recall when you guys discussed that on the pod, but it's very well said. You can't replace a 22-year-old kid with a ton of experience playing ball with an 18, 19-year-old kid green to college football. It's not an apples to apples thing. So just the current climate of college athletics and college football in particular, with how many guys do hit the portal at the end of a season, that has to be a strategy and there has to be a plan and there has to be a thought process behind it for it to be effective. And what he said, I think, is perfect for the culture that North Dakota State is. He realizes, like, you've got to get culture kids that fit being a Bison. It does take a certain type of personality and type of individual to come and play and compete for the North Dakota State Bison. And that's what produces the results that we have gotten to know and love. And the part that I love the most about it is that the guys that they are going to go and attack on the portal are guys that they have previously either recruited, there's an existing relationship, or there's some type of stake inside of that relationship where they have already identified that individual as being a quality Bison. And that's the part that I think is going to bode well for the culture to play out the way it has, and that we know it as, and to keep it. Because you can't just fill your roster with a bunch of portal kids and fill it with guys that fit the culture. You know, that just doesn't work. So again, you've got to have a plan. You've got to be prepared. And it sounds like in the current climate, based off what he's saying, absolutely. I think that is a phenomenal plan and a very good perspective to be able to bring kids in that have already been identified as a good culture fit.
All right, let's pop into some fan questions, put that out to the people. The people were more than happy to provide. We appreciate that. One question here: who's the quarterback going to be when they open the season in Boulder? I'm going to assume that this question was not yet another question about starting Cam over, or excuse me, starting Cole over Cam. And I'm going to assume that this was more of the rather dignified question of, do they lose either guy in the portal? Cam had already committed to coming back really in the preseason.
Yeah.
And I know both he and Cole Payton have NIL offers from other schools.
As they should.
And prior to the Polisek hire, prior, you know, but kind of at a time where they probably either thought Matt Entz was going to be the coach next year or Tyler Rowe was going to be the coach next year, our understanding was actually that both players were going to return and that Cole was going to continue to have his package expanded within the offense and then be the starter the following year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, kind of have it really be his thing for a year. I think that does have a chance to change. And that's not based on any inside information. That's just based on, I know how close both players were with Coach Roll. I know that both players have other opportunities in front of them. And if they were sort of on the fence or, you know, this amount of money to go here or whatever, I'm not going to sit here and make this decision for either of them, and probably neither of them care what I think. But I just think that there's a chance that the coaching change for one of the two just might be enough to say, no, I am going to take kind of life-changing money to go play 1 year of Power Five football elsewhere. I think that that chance is on there. But if you just put a gun to my head and said, you know, you need to be right on this, I would say that Cam Miller is the quarterback when they open the season against the Buffs.
Yeah, I that's what I put in the notes when you put that, is I put in all caps that it was Cam Miller light. It's too early to tell as far as like one of them leaving, or both or none. Obviously that'll both play out how it plays out. Both would be really hashtag both bad.
Would be bad.
Hashtag not good. I don't necessarily see that happen. I'm sure that'll get played out once they have their conversations with Polisek and, you know, where he sees them. I don't think there's a reason to go away from Cam Miller as your starting quarterback. That's why I think we're both probably in this on the same page there. He's just too productive. His progression from last year to this year and being able to take a larger role in the offense and the way he was dropping dimes throughout this season, just being such an efficient passer. I think you have to keep Seven as your guy. And just, you know, it ties into the conversation we were just having about replacing a, you know, 22, 23-year-old guy with someone younger. And I think, you know, if Cam were to leave and Cole were to be the guy, I don't, you know, it'd certainly change kind of how the offense plays out. But
I'd still feel really good.
Yeah, I would too. But I'm just saying that if you have the same progression from Cam that he did from 22 to 23 into 23 and into 24, you're getting a very experienced, very efficient, very smart, and a guy that can win you a national championship in Cole Payton. I don't know why you would go away from that. It's no different than, okay, you know, we knew we had Carson Wentz as a backup who just had a rocket of an arm. Brock Jensen was winning national championships for us. Why go away from that? And, you know, Cam's got one under his belt as far as national titles go, but he is more than capable of winning you one. So I don't know why you wouldn't keep that as your guy, as QB1.
Yeah. Okay. Any players in attendance today? No. And I don't know that was even an option for them, frankly. The time of the day, the size of the room, but there were plenty of stakeholders. Teammakers president Derek Lang was in there. A couple Fargo Dome people were in there. Colleen was in there. Larson was in there. Phelps was in there. The whole football staff was in there. Media was like, there certainly wasn't room for any more than four or five players, and they just didn't do that. That wasn't
their season ended 48 hours ago. Yeah. I mean, if I was, you know, I wouldn't have either, you know, as much as you have wanted to be. And those are the type of things that I was interested in even as a player. So I wouldn't have been in attendance. It's a pressure as a player. You don't really care.
I wouldn't read into it.
There's nothing to really think. That's a good question. Valid question. I definitely appreciate the question, but it doesn't matter.
I wouldn't read into it as a lack of support.
right?
Might there be a yes? That, I'm going to shoot you straight. Yes. Might there be a bigger late signing period class this year, given the flips and the I mean, they're not. I don't think they have any chance of getting the quarterback back in the boat. I just don't. I think if Maxwell Wood's situation doesn't seem great, I do wonder though if NDSU, not NDSU the program, but I wonder if some NIL muscles get flexed there. I don't know how organized the NIL situation is down in Brookings. This might be a situation where, like I said, there might be some NIL muscles that potentially get flexed to kind of figure out what this, you know, flip was about.
Yeah.
The only thing, you know, we kind of talked about, and look, Maxwell Woods is probably going to be a very, very good player. I did mention that the Bison did redshirt two backs, I think even a year after not taking a back at all. You know, they redshirt both Kelly Watson and Charmar Barney Brown. I again, I don't know if that's any part of the conversation, but I think the Bison like both of those backs. Not that they've proven obviously anything, but to be a back in a class after two backs, neither of whom burned a redshirt, is potentially a conversation that could have been had. I don't know. You know, and I think Maxwell as a three-star, although I think Marty might have been a three-star, but Maxwell as a three-star, that's a big deal. I mean, that there's no way to spin that into not a big loss. As of right now, it is a big loss.
Yeah, on paper, it certainly is. I mean, anytime you get, you know, the Minnesota Player of the Year, Mr. Football, whatever, you know, label he won, and Minneapolis has obviously been a strong pipeline for North Dakota State guys, and especially guys that have won Mr. Football or, you know, the Minnesota Player of the Year. So, you know, tough to see, but, you know, certainly can understand it from the young man's lens. But the NIL piece, it's certainly worth the conversation and a phone call that, you know, tell the kid, hey, you know, here's what we have on the table for you. And, you know, is there any possible way that this changes your mind, and, you know, really get a pulse on what the kid is feeling and thinking for making that flip and that decision. It could have been a myriad of reasons. Like you said, I mean, maybe
they had no head coach. I mean, you never know.
Yeah. Okay. The two gentlemen that you mentioned that redshirted, are they like the guy? And they foresee him sitting out and redshirting as well. And then he wants to play right away.
With Isaiah Davis on his way out, you know, you never know. Yeah,
exactly. So, you know, everyone's got different priorities of what they're looking for when they're trying to find a home to play college football. And, you know, maybe his line up better with South Dakota State, unfortunately, from a Bison lens. But I think it's definitely worth at least that phone call conversation to say, hey, here's what's at stake if you, you know, come back.
Okay. Will we see a 1,000-yard rusher next year? And is a running back? I'm going to say no. You know, they'll continue to be depending on what happens on the offensive line, depending on what happens at quarterback. I don't see anything other than another committee. And that's been fine. Cam Miller will continue to have design runs called for him. If Cole Payton is a part of things, he'll continue to have design runs called for him. But other than that, I mean, I still see Owen Johnson returning from injury. I still see TK Marshall on the roster. I still see Barika Panu on the roster. I still see, you know, again, Marty Brown and Kelly Watson, you know, redshirting. I don't see a 1,000-yard individual rusher. And you can go back. I mean, here's the crazy thing about that, right? This is the wonderful world of podcasting as I'm looking stuff up. But here's the Valley leaders. And this is what's kind of bananas about the whole 1,000-yard rusher question. Mm-hmm. Here's your leaders, your Valley leader in rushing. I know the answer is very simple in rushing, and that's Isaiah Davis. So Trev, how many 1,000-yard rushers do you think there were in the Valley this year?
If I had to guess.
Yep.
Two.
You nailed it. And you didn't cheat. I looked at you. You didn't cheat.
Yeah.
Tyshawn King had 1,011 yards at Youngstown State, and then Isaiah Davis had almost 1,500 yards at South Dakota State.
Yeah, my thought was Youngstown, because who was the young man that they had a year ago?
McLaughlin.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So I figured, you know, that production has to get made up somewhere. So that was my thought, was Youngstown. I didn't know that off the top of my head. I just kind of assumed.
And now NDSU has three of the top 11 rushers and four of the top 17. So they still ran the ball just fine. But you have 760 some odd yards from Tomerick, 600 some odd yards from both Cam and Cole, and then 500 yards from Barica. That's you know, not the same, right? Like, that's
it is. But here, okay, I'm on the other side of the coin. I think they do for a couple of different reasons.
Who?
How many yards do you say that? And it goes back to my point of what I just made about Youngstown with McLaughlin getting replaced. How many yards did Tomerick have?
Tomerick had 750.
So that's got to get made up somewhere.
Okay.
Okay. The way Rajah ran the ball, does he get reallocated as a running back? Maybe not by his title in his bio.
That thins out the touches more to me.
Maybe he's your premier back. Maybe he's not. Maybe he doesn't have 14 touchdowns. Maybe he has two or three, but he's got 1,000 yards. And the reason I say that is because I know Coach P. I know he likes to have a feature back, and he is going to give that individual a lot of touches. And that includes the screen game.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be a lot of mouths to feed situation again. But that's fine. We don't have to agree on everything.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, I think if you don't, you're going to have someone that's very, very close. Who that is, I don't know. Because we don't know enough about these guys that redshirted that we see as formidable guys toting the rock. If it's by committee, that's great. Now you got more bodies. If somebody gets hurt, unfortunately, it's the nature of the game, especially as a running back at North Dakota State. Because what they tell recruits that are running backs are, we're going to give you the ball, you got to put the program on your back. So I would like to think that Coach P is going to advocate for having a feature back. And what I would like to see is 1,000-yard rusher inside of that.
Okay. Well, like I said, agree to disagree. It's very okay that we don't agree. Mm-hmm. What do you think the coaching staff – oh, now I'm really going to make people uncomfortable. What do you think the coaching staff looks like once it's finalized? Okay. So I think there's a couple keys here. Number one is whether or not you think Tyler Roll will agree to stay with the program. I think that's sort of domino number one.
Right.
I think the obvious first knee-jerk snap reaction is no. You know, he will seek another opportunity after pretty clear disappointment that he wasn't the head guy. And I'm going to go with that as my prediction with no knowledge other than I do think he'll probably, you know, look to move on. Do you stick with Jason Petrino? I don't know that there's any real connection between Jason Petrino and Tim Polasek, defensive coordinator. Same thing with the opposite way, right? So defensive coordinator for an offensive head coach is an extremely crucial position.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Jason Petrino is going to be that guy for Tim Polasek. I don't.
It doesn't seem that way at surface level. Again, this is all us just kind of spitballing without any real substance to stand on behind that. I think what Coach Polasek is going to look at is what he saw for production defensively in his time at North Dakota State from a points per game perspective and being allowed, and then look at what it was in 2023 and then make his decision from there. I would have to imagine he's got somebody in mind. I do not know who that is. I wish I would, because I could talk about it and give you a better answer.
Can I say something?
What are you going to say? I know what you're going to say.
Putting it out there?
Yeah.
Do you know who's unemployed right now?
Scotty Hazleton. Oh, my gosh.
Scotty Hazleton.
Did we just put that out there? I love Coach Hayes, buddy.
I just
Scotty, if you're listening, and I know you're not, let me make a pitch for you. And I've got nothing to offer you other than I would love to see you back in the green and gold.
I think, you know, I don't know that I would blame a lot of what went on at Michigan State on him. You know, they've decided to go a different direction there with Joe Rossi, former Gophers defensive coordinator. You know, of course, was the defensive coordinator that Klieman hired in 2019, and then took a very nice payday to go to Michigan State. But Coach Hayes was the defensive line coach at NDSU from 07 to 09, and then the defensive coordinator and linebackers coach at NDSU from 2010 to 2011. Then he pulled a Matt Entz in 2012 and went to USC to coach the linebackers. Quite literally, that is what he did. Followed by a defensive coordinator spot at Nevada, some time with the Jaguars and the pros, then the Wyoming defensive coordinator position, the Kansas State defensive coordinator position. And then, I mean, he's as intertwined with the program and with Polisic as you could possibly be.
Coach Hayes is a Bison. I'm going to tell you that right now. And the reason I say that is because when he left for USC, what, 2012? Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So when we had our spring game ahead of the 2013 season, we were up in the concourse at the Fargo Dome doing like an autograph thing. And we sat there and, you know, signed and, you know, folks came through and whatever. It was kind of like Fan Fest, but in the spring.
Sure.
And it was the day of the spring game. He came through with his family and talked to every single one of us. Now, why on earth would a guy who just left there going to USC come back for a spring game at North Dakota State just to see the guys?
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
Anyway, please don't. People, please don't have the expectation of Scott Hazelton's defense.
No, and another thing too, and like I have a biased lens here because he's a friend and was a former roommate. But I would love to see Gio in that position.
Sure,
it would be. He's to me, Gio's a leader of men. And so, and just knowing how smart he is, I think he would be a good tactician in that position. And obviously, he's got ins and outs of the program. He understands the scheme that they're trying to accomplish, and he obviously executed it very well once upon a time. So,
and I tell you what, that would be even more the reason to bring in a guy like Hazelton is like, okay, I want you to mentor Grant for a year in this way. And then,
oh yeah, yeah.
Take your big paycheck and beat it.
Yeah. You know, come here, give your service to the program. Cause we know green and gold's in your blood. And then, you know, take your next, you know, Big Ten job because it will come.
Right, beat it.
That's actually a good, yeah. Go ahead. We know what you're here for. We know your timeline.
Yeah.
And then here's the keys for Gio. Yeah. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
The other thing I'll say is I do think that there's a chance for a repositioning of Dan Larsen. Coach P was the O-line coach for 4 years at Iowa. I don't know that he's going to have kind of that transitional, like Dan Larsen is a head coach really by trade and, you know, did the running back coach stuff. And I think he's done some good things in that O-line room. I think that Polisic is probably going to want his hands on that room. I would also say that there isn't necessarily a player to like stamp Dan Larsen's developmental stamp on. A lot of the guys that have done great, great things during Dan Larsen's time as the O-line coach were guys that Blazek and Riley brought in and developed the early part of their careers. Right. So there isn't a redshirt sophomore or a redshirt freshman or a true sophomore on that deal or O-line where you're like, hell yeah, that was a Dan Larsen kid. Just hasn't happened yet. So I wonder if there's not a different focus there. One name that I brought up, you can just look at what NDSU assistants make compared to what UND assistant make. Joe Pollack has done a hell of a job. You talk about Donnie Ventrella, you talk about Easton Kilty, you talk about Matt Willetsko at UND. This is a man that coached for 3 years with Coach Polisic at Iowa, has been born and bred in it at that Hawkeye offensive line factory. The boys at NDSU could offer Pollack a significant raise. So
I'll put it this way. I'd be floored. And again, have nothing to stand on with anything of staff changes to any stretch of the imagination. I would be shocked if that phone call hasn't been made.
Sure.
Pure speculation, but you almost have to make it. And that's not to knock Larsen. But you bring in a new header who has got experience with O-line coaches elsewhere. At least
you got
to
one
our knowledge.
50 miles north, who's killing it right now. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And by the way, like I said, a reassignment of Dan Larsen could be in the, I'm not saying that he needs to pack his bags.
Yeah. This goes back to our conversation we were having earlier though, of Polisic seeing that bridge of the gap of the North Dakota State brand and where he knows he could bring it. You got a guy that has got experience at Iowa and Pollack. Dan Larsen doesn't have.
No, he's a 90% he's a D3 head coach before he got to.
He's, you know, he's been at Duluth. I think he was at Eau Claire or something like that.
Yep.
So I, you know, anyway, that's, yeah, just kind of our two cents on, on the topic there.
We don't want to get in any more trouble than we probably already just did.
Yeah. I'm probably going to get a text once this is released. So,
and then over under on how long before the national media picks up on Polisek calling out a win in Boulder. I bet Prime will pick up on it.
He probably already has.
Yeah. I bet it'll get picked up by somebody. But that was funny. And certainly something that, will be remembered. All right, Trevor, this is an hour and 5 minute meat sandwich of a podcast. Thank you, buddy. Thanks to Gateway Chevrolet. And thanks to all you fine people for listening. Have a great week. Go Bison.